I want to thank you all for being here this morning, and I hope it was your desire to come to the house of the Lord that we might give honor and praise and glory to our Lord and Savior. If I say of anything of worthwhile this morning, you need to give him all the honor and praise and glory, because I always step up here not knowing exactly where I'll start or where I'll end. Without the help of the Lord, I can't. On Wednesday nights, we've been having our church service here on Wednesday nights. We have it more informally. We have it back in the kitchen. And we started out doing this when I tried to take over the large part of Wednesday nights. I started off with the parables of Christ. And we went over right at 50 parables of Christ and tried to talk about what they meant and what Christ was meaning, because he does a tremendous amount of his teaching through those parables. We finished that, and then last year we went into the life of David. We kind of go back and forth between the Old Testament and the New Testament. We went back to the life of David from in the first chapter of the book of Samuel, from the book of first book of Samuel, where David was anointed king by the Lord all the way through his life, how he became king, and he was ruling a king, his glories and his troubles, all the way to the time of his death, and he was succeeded by his son, King Solomon. Went all through that. We finished that last spring. This fall, we've started the book of Acts, going through and talking back over in the New Testament in the book of Acts, looking at how the church got started, how the initial church started. The first chapter of Acts, of course, Jesus is there talking to his disciples. He ascends into heaven. That's discussed there. They replace the apostle that was missing because of Judas killed himself. And then in the second chapter of Acts is Day of Pentecost. And that was one of the greatest days, of course, in the early beginnings of the church, because we had 3,000 people join the church that day in the book of Acts. Then last Wednesday, not this week, but a week ago, about 12 days ago, we got into this third chapter of Acts. In that, we talk about, after the Day of Pentecost, John and Peter went into the temple go to church. They went into the temple, and they didn't make it into the temple. There on the steps was a beggar. A beggar who was lame and had been lame since birth, his whole life. And they had to carry him in there so he could sit there at the entrance of the temple, and he was begging for money, asking for alms, as they called it then, but begging for money as he came in. And usually when I do these Wednesday night services, I'll have an idea. I'll study ahead of time, and I'll have an idea about how far we need to get. I need to get halfway through that chapter or something, and I've kind of marked it off. As we talked about that, and we talked about Peter and John going into the temple and the beggar asking for money, and Peter, of course, answered, well, we don't have any money. We don't have any silver and gold, but I'll give you what I got. And he reached down, took the man's hand and said, rise up and walk. And John and Peter healed that man that day, and he went leaping and shouting joyfully in the temple. And, of course, that created problems with the Pharisees then, but that was another part. We had a number more people join the church after seeing that day. That was the growth of the early part of the church. When I said John and Peter went into the temple there and saw the man begging, I don't know why I asked, and I'll jokingly say I made the mistake of asking, should we give to beggars? Well, I didn't get to finish what all I was doing that night, because we spent the next almost half hour talking about whether we should give to beggars and discussing that. We were discussing that subject and got into that, and it went places I had no clue, wasn't planning on, wasn't thinking about. I lost control of my service. Everybody that was there started talking about this. And I mentioned, you know, that I had seen a beggar that day as I left my office out on South Loop 289, went down and circled around underneath the underpass at Loop 289 and University. There's always someone there on the street corner, nearly every time. They're always there with a sign, homeless, need help, please give money, something like that. And generally, I'll roll down my window and maybe hand them a few dollars, whatever. And I had done that day, and so that was kind of on my mind. But we got started into what turned out to be a wonderful discussion. I felt like the Spirit of the Lord was in that, because I didn't direct it and hadn't intended it and didn't even think about saying it. It just came off the cuff. Should we give these type of beggars like that? And we had a wonderful discussion about that. And I heard a lot of interesting stories, some funny stories about whether we should. You know, we don't know whether to give to beggars. We don't know whether they're ripping us off or not, those type of things. Even Brother Larry had a real good comment that we kind of interested on. He said he was in Dallas one time with two men. The men weren't Primitive Baptists, or Old Baptists at all, but they were known as godly men, and they'd seen a man there, didn't have any legs, and he was on the street begging. One of them said, "I'm going to give him some money." And the other one says, "I don't know why. You know he's just going to go buy a drink with it." And he said, the first man says, "Well, if I'd lost both legs, I'd probably want a drink too." You know, and that whole conversation made me think, and I had to travel to Abilene, I think, the next day or the next day after that, and I was coming back into town, turning off to go down 34th Street to my house, and right there at the Interstate 27 and 34th Street was a man in a wheelchair, no legs. I said, "There's no way I cannot get this man money after that." You know, I mean, boy, I thought, "Lord, you put it on me. I can't do anything except getting money in." But, you know, and he had on a vest, and he had on a vest where you could tell he wanted people to see him. He was doing road work. He was in a wheelchair, and obviously he'd been doing it and was at it. You know, and I thought, well, is he sincere? Is he ripping me off or not? You know, but after Brother Larry's story, I had to give him money. I thought, well, so I did. I gave him a little bit more than I probably usually would, and gave him some. I told the story about when I first came to Texas Tech, came to Lubbock. My dad came up with me, and he helped get me a job at a printing plant here. You know, when I was a linotype operator, typesetter, and nobody thought I could set type with my hands, type at all. And so my dad had to come out and help convince him to give me a job, and he got me a job. And in the back shop there was another printer named Jerry Smith. He was a deaf mute. Couldn't speak, couldn't hear. And I enjoyed working with him, and he taught me how the sign language, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I'm not real good at it, but I still know the basic alphabets and, you know, pretty and old and shot of coffee. I still know a little bit of the sign language, but he taught me that. One day when we were there, we had these people come by who were deaf mutes. And they were clearly asking for money. And they had little pencils they were handing out with a little sign on it, you know, and asking for money. And we said, "Well, you know, how much do you want for that?" And they said, "Well, whatever you want to give us." You know, people were giving them $5, $10. And after they left, Jerry told me, "Don't ever give to those people." You know, and I'm going, "Why?" And he said, "They make tons of money. They work off people's sympathies." And he said, "That's all they do. They could work for a living." You know, and he said, of course, he said, "Like me, I work." He said, "They could work for a living. They're skilled. They're taught." And he says, "They're ripping you off." All this conversation has caused me to think, should we give to beggars? Why should we? And should we? And how do we know? How do we know when we're getting ripped off? How do we know when they're going to use it for the right purpose? How do I know when I'm going to get credit for it? If I roll down the window, give a man some money, should I also give him my card and say, you know, I want you to pay me back at some point in time? Here's my name and address. I remember when I was later on after my wife died and my children were riding with me, my son, my daughter. My daughter's here today. And we came across one of those beggars, and she may not remember this story, but on the street corner, and I rolled in the window, and I think I handed him a couple of dollars. And my son never asked questions, but my daughter, she asked all the questions. And she said, "Why don't you give him money?" And I said, "Well, I figure he probably needs it. He's probably homeless and needs it." And she said, "How much did you give him?" And I said, "I don't know, $2 or $3, kind of whatever in my pocket." And she says, "Well, does he need more?" And I went, "Well, I hadn't thought of that, really. He may. He actually may need more." She said, "Well, if he needs more, should we go back and give him more?" This raises all these sorts of questions that I don't really have a good answer for you, except it's caused me to think about talking to you this morning, especially this discussion we had last week. This morning, I'm in the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes is one of those books we call books of poetry. It's in the middle of the Bible. It's after the history of the Old Testament. But those five books of poetry, Job and Psalms and Proverbs, Ecclesiastes and Songs of Solomon. Job, you know, is a book about the story of Job and his life. And then we have Psalms, which are King David's Psalms. Those last three books, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and Songs of Solomon, were all written by Solomon. He shares his wisdom with us in that, and I'm in Ecclesiastes. It's the one I want to speak to you about this morning. But first of all, you know, one of the things we ask is, when we have these books of wisdom here of Solomon's, you know, does he know what he's talking about? You know, if I want to take advice from somebody, I'd like to know the person knows what they're talking about. Well, let's go back a second here to the first book of Kings, third chapter. When Solomon takes over as king behind his father David, Solomon, he says he's a young man, but we know he's already had children, so he's probably in his early 20s, but he's a young man. And the Lord comes to him, blesses him, and said, "Now, Solomon, what do you need?" Comes to him in dreams, says, "What can I give you? He asked me what you want." And Solomon said, "I need wisdom. I need to be able to have understanding so I can properly judge the people. I want to be a good king for the people, Lord. And the Lord came back and said, you could have asked for riches for yourself and you didn't. You could have asked for relief from your enemies and you didn't do that either. He said, there are all these things you could have asked me for that you did not ask. He said, for that reason, I'm going to give you wisdom. And over there in that first chapter, in that third chapter, he says, and the Lord made Solomon the wisest man in the history of the world. None before him and none after him have ever been as wise as Solomon. He said, in addition to that, I'm going to give you the riches that you didn't ask for. And he made Solomon one of the greatest, most wealthy kings the world has ever known. Solomon is, without doubt, the wisest man in the history of the world. Now, we're told over in 11th chapter of Matthew, I believe it's verse 42, that he's not wiser than Jesus, of course. But among anybody else other than Jesus, Solomon, of course, is the wisest man in the history of the world. So you can go down to the bookstore, and you can buy all the books you want to buy, how-to books and this kind. When it comes to basic wisdom, you're not going to do any better than reading Solomon, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Songs of Solomon. Go with me to the book of Ecclesiastes if you have your Bibles with you this morning. We're in the 11th chapter. I'm going to read the first six verses of the 11th chapter, and y'all know how this starts. You've heard this before. But I want to talk about the first six verses because I think all this goes together. Chapter 11 of Ecclesiastes, verse 1. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Give a portion to seven and also to eight, for thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if the tree falls toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. As thou knowest not what is the way of the spirit, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child, even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. In the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand, for thou knowest not whether shall prosper, either that or this or that, whether they both shall be alike good. All this has to do with the same subject matter, but sometimes we don't understand it. We've heard the first verse. We've got a song we sing. I believe it's in our new book, 144. Blessed are the saints who render faithful services of love to the Lord's dear little children as they seek those things above. Cast your bread upon the water, never asking if it pays. God has promised to return it to you after many days. What does that mean? Now, you know, we know that has to do with giving. Giving not only money, primarily money, but also of ourselves. Giving ourselves. What does this mean? Let's talk about this a little bit and see if the wisest man in the world can give us a little bit of direction as to what we should do on this concept of giving. Cast thy bread upon the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. Where did that come from? You know, we know that, you know, if you look at this in a basic sense, cast thy bread upon the waters. Bread is a symbol of the necessities of life. It's what you need to sustain life. For us, generally, we think of it as money, but it's anything that helps a person sustain life, sustain their way of life. Cast thy bread upon the waters. If you go into Revelations, I believe it's chapter 17, verse 15 or 15, sort of 17. I've got them backwards now. Anyway, we're told that waters represent the masses of people. If you go read that, actually it says on the waters where the whores live and the nations and the peoples and the masses of people, all the various tongues, they represent the waters. That's what they're talking about when he's talking about the waters. Cast your bread upon the waters, upon the masses of people. Thou shalt find it after many days. Solomon, where do you get this? Solomon, like Jesus over in the New Testament, Jesus taught by way of parables. He would teach us something that we know and then use it to teach us some spiritual thing. He would give us a concept that we know in everyday life. Then he would use that to teach us what the Bible's talking about and what the Lord wants us to do. Solomon uses the same technique, parable, similes, analogies, those type of things. Cast thy bread upon the waters, and thou shalt find it after many days. Back in that day, they had two or three things that this made sense to the local people. Had a lot of merchants then who would raise their grain and have to sell it, and they couldn't sell it locally. They would raise more, and we knew that in Texas. We take our cotton and our grains, and we sell it down seas, but we've got markets to go to. We've got the internet, and we've got cotton brokers and all these brokers that help us sell it and market it. Back then, they didn't have that. So you had to take your grain, and you'd go down to the local merchant, see a shipman, captain, and you'd give him your grain, and you'd say, sell it. And that's what we're talking about. Cast your grain upon the water, send it, ship it off to someplace else. And then in many days, then you'll get your return back. The captain would have to go out and sell it for you, go to another port and sell it for you, and come back, and you'd get your reward. That was kind of standard practice. Verse 2 says, give a portion to seven and also eight. Don't just go to one place, you're putting all your eggs in one basket. Go to several ports, get the best price you can, and then bring it back to me. Cast thy bread on the waters also had to do with farming. Along the Jordan River and along the Nile River, and Brother Kenny might be generally familiar with this concept, those rivers would flood every now and then, flood and flood up over the banks, and the water would kill all the weeds, but the farmer would go out and cast their seed in that waters, on the flooded, on the edge banks, and it would settle down with the silt, and it would settle in, and when the waters receded, then you had it planted, and I think rice, you know, that's my concept of how rice farming is. They plant those in heavy water, and that's the way they get them irrigated and get them started. You cast their seed up on the waters, and you don't really know where it's going to end up, but you'd cast more than just what for you. You would cast more, and sometimes it would go to other people, and sometimes you didn't know whether it was going to pay off or not, but you trusted in the Lord. Another idea that worked then, and this one's a little bit more literally, is about if you had a small river or a creek or a fish pond or fish tank or something like this, you'd go cast your bread on the water and feed the fish. And in come in due season, your fish will have multiplied and you would get it paid back. Now, those are the concepts that people understood, what you're saying about casting the bread on the water. They had an idea of what that meant literally. What it meant here, though, spiritually is, to us, is cast our bread on the waters. We really don't know what's going to happen to it. We really don't know where it's going. But cast it on the waters and you'll get it back in many ways. We got Brother Kenny Willman here with us this morning. Brother Kenny was a banker in Levelland for many, many years. And I could go to him and I could say, Brother Kenny, I need to borrow some money. Of course, like any banker, he's going to say, what do you want it for? I want to go throw it on the water. I have a feeling that's not going to get past his loan committee. If I could talk him into carrying it to his loan committee. This doesn't make sense to us. Cast your bread on the water. First of all, if it's just bread, I'm going to literally throw it and it's going to get soggy. How is soggy bread going to come back and help me in any way? Where's it going to go? I have no clue where that's going when it leaves my hand. I cast it. I don't have a clue. No way in the world do I know what. It doesn't make sense to us about, hey, I need to save my money for hard times. Why do I want to go cast it out where I have no control over it at all? You know, I have a limited supply of money, and I need to keep it with me. You know, that's hard. I live on a limited income, perhaps. You know, whether I'm young and I'm not making enough money or whether I'm old and I've quit working and I'm limited income, I can't just go out and do that. I can't go out and cast my money out like that, not having any idea where it's going to go. Spiritually, though, the wisest man in history of the world has given us instruction. Cast it on the waters, for thou shalt find it after many days. And he says, verse 2, that's the basic instruction. Look at verse 2. Give a portion to seven and also to eight. Don't just cast it once. Don't just give it here, but give it here and give it here and give it here. Back in the old days, when the merchant was doing that, was called diversify. You diversify your investments. You put your money in different places, put your resources. Solomon is saying, give your charity to different places. Diversify where your charity is, because thou knowest not. I want you to look at this, what he said. For thou knowest not. We don't know. A lot of things we don't know. We think we do, and we're going to see that in just a minute. Thou knowest not what evil shall be upon the earth. We don't know what's going on the earth. We don't know what the evil is and where it's going to be. So we're supposed to cast our bread on the waters many different ways. And if you notice, it doesn't say cast thy bread upon the water. It says waters. More than one. Verse 2 clarifies that. It says give a portion to seven, also to eight. And it doesn't say, you know, give a piece. If I go give a man a dollar bill, can he do anything with that? I'm to give him a portion. I should give him enough that he can buy a meal. Give him enough you can do something with. That's what it's talking about. Give a portion. That's more than just a piecemeal. more than just a penny, a few pennies, not dropping a few pennies in the cup, ought to provide something that's worthwhile and something that he can do something with. Give him a portion. If you can afford it and he can't, we ought to be giving it to him. That's what Solomon tells us. For thou knowest not what evil shall be on the earth. We don't know what's facing people, and we don't know what's coming. One of the great lessons here, though, that we learn is that when we cast our bread on the waters like that, we're told the Lord promises it'll come back to you after many days. The Lord knows that we are willing, we give willingly and cheerfully to people that stand in need. There may be a time when we stand in need, when the evil comes upon us. And the Lord says, clearly, that's when it comes back to you. That's what will come back to you then. Now, let's look. And he's given us a basic instruction up in 1 and 2. Number 1, cast your bread on the water. Give openly and freely, even though you don't know what's going to happen to it. Number 2, give generously. Give to more than one cause. Give generously, for thou knowest not what evil shall be on the earth. Now, that's our basic instruction. Now, don't you look what he says in verses 3, 4, and 5. Verses 3, he tells us what we know and we understand. If the clouds be full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. You know, you can go out and look and you say, it's going to rain here in a minute. I can tell, but look, it's dark, it's cloudy. I know it's going to rain. I can understand that and I can see it. If the clouds be full of rain, they're going to empty themselves on the earth. And if the tree fall toward the south or toward the north, in the place where the tree falleth, there it shall be. Well, that makes so much sense. Why is it even here? If the tree falls left, it's going to land left. If it falls right, it's going to land right. You know, I got quoted by a judge one time because he said something, and I went, well, okay, wherever you go, there you are. That's what it's saying. Wherever it falls, there it is. I know that, and I understand that. I don't have to explain that to me. That's what he's telling me. That's our understanding of nature, verse 3. I understand that with certainty. I know that if it's dark and it's cloudy, it's going to rain. I know that if a tree falls left, there it is. I know that. I can see that. That's easy. Look at verse 4. But he that observeth the wind shall not sow. You may observe the wind and decide, I'm not going to plant today. I'm not going to sow. I'm not going to give to someone if I see something. And he that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. To sow is to give. To reap is to receive back, to get. To give and to get. He that observeth the wind shall not sow. He that regardeth the clouds shall not reap. Now, we're going to come back to this in a minute. Now, verse 5, he tells us why that's important. As thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit. Some people interpret that as wind. I think it's actually meaning spirit. But either way, thou knowest not what is the way of the Spirit. Do we know which way a hurricane's going to go? When a hurricane's coming in, can we predict exactly certain where it's going to land? Remember a few years ago we had Hurricane Katrina that landed on New Orleans, and a few weeks after that we had Hurricane Rita, and it was a bigger one, a Category 5 hurricane heading straight to Houston, and man, we were taking all sorts of precautions. They were evacuating Houston, but I remember seeing a headline, monsters heading for Texas, and it was huge, hundreds of miles wide, but within a day or two, it totally dissipated and turned into a tropical storm, and yet we predicted it was going to hit, and we're taking all sorts of precautions. We know it's not what's the way of the Spirit. We don't know which way the wind's going to blow, nor how the bones do grow in the womb of her that is with child. We can't even figure out how a baby works, do we? We hadn't figured that out yet. With our greatest scientists, we still don't understand how does that work inside there. We don't know that. Even so, thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. Who makes the wind? God does. Who makes the bones to grow in a child? God does. We don't understand God, so we've got to be careful about making decisions on things God makes, because God can make those and change them. Verse 6, in the morning sow thy seed, and in the evening withhold not thine hand. If you plant in the morning, plant in the evening too. If you're going to cast your bread in the morning, cast it in the evening too. We'll talk about that again in a minute. For thou knowest not whether which one shall prosper, either this or that, or whether they both shall be good. You don't know which one's going to work, which one's not going to work. Let's go back and look now. If I go back to that beggar on the street that I see over here, and I'm going around, I see him, and he's asking for money, and I look down, he got on a brand new pair of Air Jordan Nikes. If he can afford those, what's he doing out here begging? He that observeth, he that observeth the wind shall not sow. If he's got on a pair of Nikes, he doesn't need money. I've just made a decision. I can see that and I know it and I understand it. I don't know where he got those. Somebody could have given him those at the Salvation Army, and I don't know that, but he doesn't have any food. I'm making a decision on what I know, and the Lord tells me here, don't do that. That's not our job. He that observeth the wind shall not sow, and if I don't sow, I'm not going to reap. You know, we make decisions about, well, does he really need that money? I make that decision, and how much does he need? Well, we're told here he needs a portion. Everybody needs at least a portion. We've got to determine how much that is, but it's more than just a minuscule, more than just a tidbit, more than just a partial, but a portion. And we're not to make a decision whether he knows or not because we don't know. And I think there are times maybe when we know a little bit, and we'll talk about that in a moment too. But he gives us instruction. You don't know what you think you know. You don't know God. If you rely on God, that's certain. If you rely on the wind or these things you think you know, that a tree falls here, that we see the thing, then we don't understand God and we know us not. And that's what he's telling us here. You know us not the way of the Spirit, nor how the bones grow. Even so thou knowest not the works of God who maketh all. Everything we think we understand, God made that. And we don't understand his works. And we don't understand. If I give money over here, if I cast money out, how's that ever going to come back to me? I go out and I give it to a beggar on the street. He doesn't know me from Adam, and we've already established I don't need to give him my name. I'm not supposed to even let anybody know when I'm giving. That's almsgiving. That's over in the Sermon on the Mount. I'm supposed to be secret about my giving. If I give to him and he doesn't know who I am, how's he ever going to pay me back? How am I ever going to get that back? The Lord says, it'll come back to you. Don't know when exactly. The Lord will determine that, but the Lord says, that's the way we're to give. Not anticipating how it's going to benefit us, not expecting it in any way to benefit us. If we give with the right heart and give the right amount and the right heart, it'll come back to you in many ways. In the morning, sow thy seed, verse 6, and in the evening, withhold not thine hand. Well, let's say in the morning, I give to the church. I go out this afternoon, there's a beggar on the street. I gave this morning. I'm not giving this afternoon. But it says, you don't know which one needs it. I should give to both. Don't withhold your hand in the afternoon simply because you gave the morning. Just because you sowed and cast it in the morning doesn't mean you shouldn't this afternoon. Don't give in the morning and don't withhold in the evening. How about when you're young? I'll give when I'm young. I'll do that, whatever, and I get to be old and now my money's tight and I can't do it. I gave a whole lot when I was a young man. Solomon says, don't withhold it in the evening. Don't withhold it even when you get old. Lord sees it. The Lord will pay you back. And you don't know which one will prosper alike. I'm going to pick and choose. I gave to 10 beggars this morning. Gosh, there's another one on the street this afternoon. I've given enough. I've done my share. But if I've got money and I can handle it, I should give to the next one. Because I don't know. Give to 7 or give to 8. Give a portion to 7 or 8. Because I don't know which one will prosper. I don't know which one might be the Lord. I don't know which one might be the Lord's angels. Inasmuch as ye have given it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you have given it unto me. How do I know the last one at the end of the day is not the Lord's angel? Not the one that really needs it? We don't know. We can't judge that. You know, we have a good example over, if you'll remember back over in our studies of David over in 1 Samuel, toward the end of the 1 Samuel. David has his men out, and they're struggling. They're fighting King Saul at the time, and they're running and struggling. And they run across this man called Nabal. He's got a beautiful wife, Abigail. And Nabal, it says, he's rich and powerful. He has, 3,000 camels, 1,000 goats, I forget what it is. But he's a very rich, very prosperous man, and has a beautiful wife. David goes to him and said, we need help. Can you give my men food and shelter? You got 1,000 sheep you're shearing. Can you give us some food? And help my men with water. And he goes, why should I give you my water? Why should I give you my food? It's mine. I've worked and I'm wealthy. Within 24 hours, Nabal was died of a heart attack. And a few days later, Abigail went and became the wife of David. This man was saving it all for himself. Within a day, he lost it all as it was because he refused to give to someone in need. All this is Old Testament stuff, but let's look back, flip back with me. Let's see if Solomon knew what he was talking about. Let's go back into Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 21, 22 and 9. I'll look at the top of the page rather than where I need to be. Chapter 22, verse 9. He that has a bountiful eye, bountiful in this case means generous. He who has a generous eye shall be blessed. If we like saying the law, that's not a may word, that's a shall word. He that has a bountiful eye shall be blessed, for he giveth of his bread to the poor. You're going to be blessed with your giving. The Lord makes a promise to you. The Lord has promised to return it to you after many days. Now, we don't understand that naturally because I'm throwing my bread on the water and I'm casting it out there. When I give it to a beggar on the street, he doesn't know who I am. There's absolutely no way he can pay me back. Go back with me a few chapters back also in Proverbs to Proverbs chapter 11, verse 24. There is that scattereth. That means there is he that scattereth. He that scattereth, he's that's casting his bread. He that scattereth, yet he increases. When he gives his money away, he gets richer. And there is that that withholdeth more than his meat. He withhold more than he should, more than is necessary, and it tendeth to poverty. It's going to make him less rich. He loses money by refusing to give. The man that give gets more rich, and the man that doesn't give gets less rich. The liberal soul shall be made fat. The person that's liberal with his giving shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. It tells us when we're given, we're actually increasing our wealth, increasing our resources. He that withholdeth corn, the people shall curse him. But blessing shall be upon the head of him that selleth it. I take corn, I withhold it and keep it all for myself. I'm not blessed, but if I am blessed by giving it away, giving it to those people in need. All that's Old Testament. Let's go over here to New Testament. Go with me to Luke. All of you might say that, oh, this is Old Testament, Brother Don. Let's get over here. Show me something that's in the New Testament that covers us today. Well, let's go read what Jesus tells us about that. First of all, we go to Luke chapter 6, verse 30. Jesus tells us, give to every man that asketh of thee. Give to every man that asketh thee. Morning, evening, whether you've given that day or not, giveth to every man that asketh of thee. But look, he gives us a little instruction here. And of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. This works both ways. I give, you know, we've seen beggars on the street and we're to give to every man. Jesus says, give to everybody that asks us. But then he gives us this little qualifying clause. What if I'm the beggar, and you've seen this happen, where somebody makes them mad and they'll beat up the beggar. You shouldn't be asking on the street, they'll beat him up. Lord, here, if you want to take that way, he says, don't go ask that guy again. He's not helping you. But also, what he's telling us here, if you give to someone, give to every man that asks, and if he's taken from you, if you see that he's actually stealing from you, then don't give to him again. But you got to know for sure. If you see him, go do something with that money he shouldn't be. Or in the case of this, where I had a man tell me, those people get rich doing that when they ought to be working. If you know for sure, Jesus is not telling you to throw your money away. But most of the time when we give anonymously, we don't know. And we shouldn't ask. We should give and trust the Lord to take care of it after that. Look over here further in Luke, verse 38 of Luke 6. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give unto your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet, withal it shall be measured unto you again. This is misinterpreted many times, but it has to do with giving. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Give, and you'll get it back. And that's what we're told back by Solomon. Give, and the Lord will return it. We don't know exactly when it'll happen, but the Lord will return it. And this is the interesting part. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. The bosom means that's where people carried their wallet, in pocket. You know, we did forward pants, had pockets on the back. We carried billfold. All men, and still a lot of men do, and I'll carry my checkbook here. I'll carry it in my bosom and my lap. And that's what it was referring to. If you give, after these words, good measure, pressed down, shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. I'm going to give to this beggar on the street. He doesn't know me from Adam, and there is just no way that's ever going to come back to you. You ever heard the Chamber of Commerce speeches? They say, if you'll spend a dollar in our community, this you use a lot of the little communities around town, if you'll spend a dollar here, it'll turn over seven times in the community, benefit the whole community. That's what he's talking about here. You give to this man, you don't know where it's going to go. But the Lord's going to press it down, shake it up, run it over, and suddenly I get a new client in my business. How'd that happen? Just coincidence. That's how it's returned back to you. Suddenly you'll get a refund check that you weren't expecting from somebody. Suddenly you'll find out that you've got money left over in the state treasury that you didn't know about, that is cheated to the state, and you'll be notified, hey, I got several hundred dollars there. Lord finds a way to do it, and that's what it's talking about here. You're not going to know where it's come from. It's going to be shaken down, turned around, flipped around, and come to you from some other direction totally. But the Lord shall reward you for your giving. If you give in the right heart, that's what it's telling you here. And, you know, again, when it's talking about here, it's not talking about eternal salvation. We're talking about timely salvation, how the Lord takes care of his people here in time. When you give money, it's going to be returned into. You may not know where it's coming from, and we don't have a clue. And that's why Solomon tells us, you don't know where the wind goes. You don't understand the Lord. You don't understand how he works. But I'm telling you, cast your bread upon the waters. You know, never asking if it pays. God has promised to return it to you after many days. When you cast your bread on the water, you know, there's no way you can ask where it's going to go or how it's going to pay. That's what he's saying. Give and give generously, give a portion. Go over here with me now to Luke chapter 14. Another good example of this same thought. Luke 14, verse 12. This is Jesus when he's giving them the parable about inviting people, and when you go to somebody else's house, you should take a lesser seat. He's giving them that parable right above this. Then he gets down to verse 12. Then also he said unto him, also to him that bade him, when thou makest a dinner or a supper, call not thy friends, nor thy brethren, neither thy kinsmen, nor rich neighbors, lest they also bid thee again, and a recompense be made to thee. If I invite my friends, my influential friends, my other attorneys in town and the bankers and the politicians, I'm going to invite them. Well, I do that because they'll invite me. They'll invite me back, and we'll show each other because they'll pay back. That's payback. You know, that's how it works in the world, and we know that, and we understand that. He says, don't do that. He's not telling you not to invite your friends over, not to have a meal, but he's giving us a great example here. He says, when you have a dinner or supper, call not thy friends, nor thy brethren, neither the kinsmen, nor thy rich neighbor, lest they also bid thee again, lest they invite you back. And they say, well, I want them to invite me back. That's why I'm doing it. And recompense be made to thee. Well, that's why I do it. He said, that's not what giving's about. That's not what I'm talking about, casting on your water. But when thou makest a feast, call the poor, the maimed, the lame, and the blind, and thou shalt be blessed, for they cannot recompense thee. For thou shalt be recompensed at the resurrection of the just. Don't call the rich neighbors, call the poor, the lame. They can't pay you back, but yet you'll get paid back. You'll get paid back the way the Lord would have you be paid back. Getting close on a couple more, and then I'll close. Go to Matthew, and this is one y'all all know. Matthew 6th chapter, Sermon on the Mount. Jesus teaches us about almsgiving, and that's what all this is. That's what it's called in the Bible, about giving. And y'all know this story. Therefore, when thou dost thy alms, do not sound the trumpet before thee, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and the streets, that they may have the glory of men. Verily I say unto you, they have their reward. But when you do your alms, let not the left hand know what the right hand is doing. And thine alms may be secret, but the Father which seeth in secret shall reward thee openly. Give generously, give a portion, and give it anonymously. That's what the Lord's teaching us. Don't worry about where it's going. Don't try to judge whether someone deserves it or not unless you know for sure. Don't try to make that judgment. Don't look upon him and say, he doesn't need the money, or I saw him here yesterday and he's making money. If you don't know, you give. Give to every man that asks us, and give secretly. We're promised the Lord will return it. May not be tomorrow, maybe next week, maybe when we need it the most, maybe when we're in trouble because we don't know what evil's on earth. Evil may come to us. The Lord will return it to you after many days. Let me close with Corinthians. Apostle Paul, in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, Chapter 9, verse 6. But this I say, he which soweth sparingly, who doesn't give generously, but he who soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly. And he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully. This makes no sense to us, does it, in a natural sense? The more money I give away, the more money I get back. Yeah, that's what the Lord's telling us. That doesn't make sense to us here. But again, for thou knowest not the ways of the Lord. We give anonymously. How are they going to know whether to pay me back or not? Over there, when Jesus talks about almsgiving, he said, give in secret, don't give it publicly. But if I give it publicly, they'll put my name on the building. Or they'll put my name in the paper. Or I'll get a lot of publicity. Well, the Lord tells us, you get your reward. If I invite my friends and my neighbors and the politicians, the influential people, I won't. They'll invite me back. Well, I'm getting the reward that I'm asking. I'm getting the reward of men. But he said, I'll reward you openly when you do these things. You'll get, and you'll be blessed. You won't be cursed. You'll be blessed when you give according to the way the Lord would have you give. Verse 6, he said, he that soweth sparingly shall reap sparingly. He that soweth bountifully shall reap bountifully. Every man according as he purposes in his heart, so let him give, not grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. Now don't go out and give because Brother Don told me I had to give. That's not the right way to do it. Give in your heart. Give to whoever asks us. It's not just money. It's also time and resources. You can do a whole lot. If you don't have money, you can do a whole lot with your time. You can give a lot of people of your time. You can do a lot of help that way. Cast your bread upon the waters. Every one of you knows somebody that needs help. We all see it every day, people who need help. Yeah, there's beggars on the streets. Some of them need help, and some of them are ripping you off. Let the Lord handle that. We're to give. And we're to be charitable, do it if you can afford it. And you may not can afford but a little bit. I can't afford, and he can give a whole lot more than I can. Well, I should give what I can afford to give. But I'm telling him I'm supposed to, and I should give a good valid portion. I should do it cheerfully, not grudgingly, knowing I'm trusting in the Lord. I shouldn't observe and try to figure out whether someone needs it or not, or what they're going to do with it, or whether I'm going to get a payback, whether I'm going to get attention. The Lord says, don't give for those reasons. Assume you're not going to get paid back. Give assuming you're not going to get a dime back and no recognition. You give that way, and the Lord will richly bless you. Cast your bread upon the waters, never asking if it pays. God has promised to return it to you after many days. Y'all have been very kind with your attention. My prayer is that the Lord will richly bless you. Go ahead.